The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale.
Well, thank you very much. They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one. And they tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive. This was an amazing night, an amazing day. It's been an incredible period of time in our country's history. It's been sad in so many ways, but I think it's going to be inspiring because we're going to do something that, frankly, nobody's been able to do for a long time.
Morning, Lori, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. On the Wednesday after Super Tuesday, the blowout win by Donald Trump across all demographics, almost every state, in numbers I had not anticipated, and I thought he was going to win, but I did not have any idea of the extent. Joe Biden won, too, although he got upset in American Samoa in the funniest moment of the night. If you were watching Brett Baer last night and not the Salem News Channel by mistake, you missed Brett Baer making the call of American Samoa. Cut number 27.
But we just have a call now. In American Samoa, President Biden will lose to Jason Palmer, a self-described entrepreneur and investor. He is going to win the American Samoa Democratic Caucus. This marks President Biden's first loss in the 2024 primaries. Palmer takes four delegates. President Biden takes two. We saw uncommitted with more than 100,000 votes in Michigan. I don't even know who Jason Palmer is.
I'm sure that President Biden has spent an enormous amount of time in American Samoa.
American Samoa.
On this election.
Is about to soar in American Samoa.
I don't know who I admit. I got nothing on Brett because I don't know who Jason is either, but he's more than welcome to come on, and I'm looking forward to his speech at the Democratic convention. Let me run down some real numbers for you. Arkansas, Donald Trump, 87%. Alabama, Donald Trump, 83%. Arizona, Donald Trump, 77%. California, Donald Trump, 78%. Colorado, which is a purplish state, maybe even a light blue state, 63%. Massachusetts, I can hardly believe this. He won 59.9%. In Maine, purple state, Susan Collins land of Angus King and Susan Collins, the most centrist state in the union, 72% for Donald Trump. Minnesota, 69% for Donald Trump. North Carolina, 74% for Donald Trump. Oklahoma, 81% for Donald Trump. Donald Trump got 77% in Tennessee, 77% in Texas, in Utah, which is sometimes troublesome for Donald Trump, 58%. In Virginia, Beltway land, the swamp itself, could not offset the rest of Virginia, where Donald Trump crushed it. He won 63%. Nikki Haley's sole win yesterday with 49.9%. Vermont. Now, she's won Vermont and D.C., but you can't carry on at this point. I expect the ambassador to bow gracefully today. I hope she throws her support to the former president. I hope she unifies the party. This is going to be the rematch. This is going to be the Rose Basement campaign. And I believe Trump's going to get stronger when he's on trial in Manhattan. And if he's convicted, he's going to get really strong. I was on NPR this morning with Steve Inskeep. Started the day a little bit earlier than normal and pointed out the one demographic that is most likely to empathize with the lawfare being waged against Donald Trump is black male Americans. They are watching closely the lawfare, and they are not pleased with it. They have, many of themselves, been the victim of it, or feel that they've been the victim of it, or know someone has been the victim of it. And do not discount that. Alvin Bragg has done him a favor, I think. The Jack Smith election interference case, which is not a January 6th case. It's the ridiculous, absurd reading of statutes on another stretch. That's not going to hurt him. Even if it gets to trial, it might help him again. The Fannie Willis case in Georgia has fallen apart. The only case that could have hurt him, and Jack Smith proved himself too much of a fanatic to just say, I'm bringing an obstruction charge on the papers, could have hurt him. I don't know what his defense is. He might beat that, too. But it's just a giant wipeout. Contrast a little bit more Trump last night. Cut 24.
He's the worst president in the history of our country. There's never been anything like what's happening to our country. Today it was announced that 325,000 people were flown in from parts unknown. Migrants were flown in airplane, not going through borders, not going through that great Texas barrier that I was with the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, the other day, and we were looking at the job they're doing. But in the meantime, they're pouring into California and they're pouring into Arizona because those governors aren't doing anything. They're doing nothing. But today it was just announced before I came out. It was unbelievable. I said, that must be a mistake. They flew 325,000 migrants, flew them in over the borders into our country. So that really tells you where they're coming from. They want open borders, and open borders are going to destroy our country.
Well, I've got to say, number one issue in this campaign is going to be immigration, followed closely by inflation, followed closely by crime. These are Donald Trump issues. Meanwhile, the infirm and often incoherent President Biden gave a speech, if you want to call it that, yesterday at the White House, where he said, cut number three.
Fair competition is the key to my economic vision, to build an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down. And it's working. Wages are up more than prices. Unemployment has reached historic lows. Families are finally getting a little breathing room.
He almost went on to say cut number eight.
When I raised this issue a year or so ago with some of my team, they thought no one's going to care much about it. Well, they didn't sit at my kitchen table when I was growing up.
Because it wasn't discussed in the 50s when Joe Biden was growing up. Wall Street Journal reporting Ambassador Haley will drop out of the race at 10 o'clock today. Smart move. She ran a good campaign, very disciplined. A lot of Republicans wanted a one-on-one race, a one-on-one race against a well-funded, well-prepared, experienced candidate as Nikki Haley was, representing the demographic in which Donald Trump is weakest, suburban moms, and he crushed her. And I believe the party will rally around Donald Trump largely because of immigration, inflation, and crime. And they don't like American weakness abroad either. Back to the president. He went on the tarmac yesterday. He was going somewhere, and he came up with, he says here, if you can hear over the airplane noise, that he's won five polls in a row. I don't know what he's talking about. Nobody does. Cut number four.
Mr. President, what's your message to Democrats who are concerned about your poll numbers?
My poll numbers, the last five polls, you guys are in four.
That's simply not true. And if you're watching on the Salem News Channel, he looks really, really old. And we know he's really, really old, but he looks at really, really old. Then he launches out on Israel. Although he starts right, and all he should have said, it's in Hamas's deal. Let the Americans go. Let the Israelis go. Cut number five.
It's in the hands of Hamas right now. The Israelis have been cooperating with North Korea and Russia. We don't know what they're calling in a couple days. It's going to happen. We need the ceasefire.
How close are you to the hostage deal?
I was just saying that. The hostage deal is in the hands of Hamas right now. It's been an offer, a rational offer.
Ramadan,
given the circumstances, this continues through Ramadan. Israel needs
the American hostages, all eight of them, do not care that it's Ramadan. The Israeli hostages, hopefully 135, but it's probably more like 60 still alive. They don't care about Ramadan. Israel needs to go into Rafah as soon as its military prepared to do so, fight with an eye on the reduction of civilian harm to the greatest extent possible, as they always have been. They are the most careful military in the world. They exceed America's capacity for precision because they fight in close quarters all the time, and we don't. They're better at it than we are. Explosion this morning off of the bow of a U.S.-owned ship near Yemen. No word yet on whether or not there's damage or death on the ship. And our president, not in chief, our commander, not on the scene, has not done anything to stop Yemen from freezing world trade. Look, it's an immigration, it's an education, it's an inflation, it's an appeasement campaign. The rematch, the Rose Basement campaign is on. Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. Stay tuned. I'll bring you more news of the Super Tuesday blowouts when I come back. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by United States Senator Marsha Blackburn of the state of Tennessee. Good morning, Senator. Donald Trump romped in your state last night, rolling up a margin of 77.3%. Probably the kind of margin you enjoy when you're on a primary ballot. What'd you make of that?
I think it is very clear that not only Tennesseans, but the American people and Republicans in the Republican primary are standing with Donald Trump. They are furious about the open border. They are very upset about Bidenflation. They remember that under President Trump, they had more money left at the end of the month than they had month left at the end of the money, and they want to return to those Trump economic policies. They are tired of crime in their communities. You know, in Tennessee, we have communities that have gangs that have never had a gang in their community. And they know that President Donald Trump kept his word to work with the Border Patrol, give them what they needed, and secure that border. And so they showed up in record numbers in Tennessee to support him.
Now, the number one issue in the country is immigration, and that is followed closely by economics. I believe crime is in there, and you've touched on all three. I also think Israel's on there, and I perceive in the president's waffling the possible loss of the pro-Israel, Friends of Israel coalition in the United States. I feel it every day in my bones that he's losing that. What do you think, Senator?
It has been surprising to many of us that this pro-Palestine group, pro-Hamas, is continuing to push their message forward, and they're doing it without the White House refuting them in the manner that they should. So many people are saying, we know that under Donald Trump, our allies knew they were an ally, our enemies feared us. They want that distinction. They know that it's good for the country. They know that it is good on the global stage, and they want to see that come back.
Now, Senator, you are also a veteran of the House, and you know Adam Schiff pretty well. Adam Schiff came in first or second. We don't know. We won't know for 3 days. But the other guy on that ballot is going to be Steve Garvey, because Adam Schiff basically paid for his way onto the ballot and knocked off Katie Porter, with whom he didn't serve in the House. I am curious, do you think Adam Schiff's duplicity makes him vulnerable even in deep blue California?
I do. I think that people in California have looked at this and kind of chuckled, because they know that Adam Schiff is someone who sought to be a screenwriter. That was his chosen profession, and he couldn't make it. So he's always looking to create some kind of mystery and plot, and he did it with the impeachment of President Trump. And as he came up and listened to and pushed forward Russia collusion, and I think that he is vulnerable. And Steve Garvey is someone that Californians know. They know his name. They know he is not an extremist. They know that he is someone who is credible. They've listened to him for a long time. They know him. And I think Steve Garvey is going to do much better than the pundits have given him credit for trying to do.
Boy, Democrats are mad this morning, Senator. I'm out on the West Coast for another week before I go back to the Beltway. They are so mad because he helps our friend Ken Calvert. He helps our friend Mike Garcia. Steve Garvey does. He helps Sungmin Kim. He helps Michelle Steele. He helps every incumbent Republican by having Steve Garvey in the Senate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit, if you will, about what you hope Nikki Haley says today when she withdraws from the race at 10 a.m.
I hope that Nikki Haley is going to be gracious. I hope she is going to encourage unity in the Republican Party. I think she will most likely lay out what she sees as her successes. But, you know, Hugh, the biggest success that she could have would be to be gracious in this moment and to encourage unity and encourage President Trump as he becomes the Republican nominee. It is time for us to unite this party. It is time for us to build a vision for the American people and to stop this in-party fussing. It is time for the members of the U.S. House to come together and say, we want the most conservative bill we can get out of here. It is time, pardon me, for the U.S. Senate to say, we are going to focus on taking the U.S. Senate. That's what Republicans should turn our attention to. We're going to focus on making certain that Donald Trump becomes president, and we are going to focus on building a vision for the American people so that they see the difference between Republicans and Democrats and choose our way of governing and leading this country.
Now, Senator Blackburn, you've been a campaigner long enough to know that the older vote in America matters quite a lot. So you have to talk about it in a sensitive fashion. Neither of my parents nor my wife's parents made it past 80. So I don't really know what it's like to care for an elderly parent. And unfortunately, President Biden is aging rapidly in real time in public view. And it's hard on his family. It's hard on the country. Do you think he's aware of that?
Decided that he is not. I think his life is very programmed, and he is very comfortable with that. Now, I think the First Lady and the children have to be aware of this and of the amount of assistance and help that he needs in a restricted and programmed day. I don't see how they could not be aware of that. My parents were into their late 80s and 90s, and I have helped to care for them, my husband's parents likewise. And, you know, you spot these signs of aging. You know it when you see it. Millions of Americans have been caregivers for elderly relatives and parents and siblings, and they know what is happening. They can see it. And they are making these appointments for physicians, for tending to medications, getting the proper care and living conditions for an individual. And I think the American people are looking at this, and they see a president who has contradicted positions that he has held most of his life. He has contradicted positions that he currently has held or that his administration has laid out as being a position of the administration. They see someone who has difficulty kind of getting through much of a speech or a press conference or giving remarks off the cuff. They witness every bit of this. And they, on one hand, they feel sorrow for him that he is doing this on a global stage. And on another, they really regret that this is happening for our nation and that the entire world is observing this and therefore doubting our ability to move forward as the nation that's always going to show up and help to defend you when your country gets in trouble. And by the way, we help you out and then we leave and we don't take your treasure. We don't take your land. We don't change the life of your people except for the better.
Senator Marsha Blackburn, always good to talk to you. Thank you, sir, again for joining me and representing the volunteer state so well. I appreciate it. You have a great day. As always, candid, forthcoming, and on the point. I want to remind everyone, Alliance Defending Freedom is a sponsor of our show. And right now over at HughHewitt.com, at the top of my website, takes a second to load, you'll find the Alliance Defending Freedom banner. Please give $25, $50, $100. They are America's most important free public litigators. So they are not for profit. Every dollar you give is tax deductible. You wish you'd given last year because you're doing your taxes right now, and all that would be deductible. ADF works for you. Alliance Defends on X, but where you go is the top of HughHewitt.com. Hit that banner and be as generous as possible. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, Mary Catherine Hamm, co-host with Vic Mattis of Getting Hammered, one of the country's most popular podcasts. Also, you see her everywhere in television. On X, you watch her at MK Hammer. Mary Catherine, your general results of the Trump blowout win last night across the country, save in Vermont.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of expected at this point. There was a point in this race where there might have been an opening for an alternative to Trump, but I think that window closed a while ago. I think, Haley earned the right to be in the race up until this point. I believe the news broke earlier that she is suspending. And I think she did it on the strength of some pretty strong debate performances and appealing to a part of the party who would like an alternative. But the math has to work, right? And in this case, it's not working.
So, Mary Catherine, what would you like if you were her speechwriter, and you could be a very fine speechwriter if you ever wanted to do it for anyone? What would you write into her speech this morning?
I mean, you start with thanking the people who voted for you, obviously, and there was, the energy that did exist for your campaign. I think it depends. Does she want to be the "I told you so" person? Right now, the "I told you so" candidate philosophy is based on Trump losing the general election, which, if you look at the polls right now, that does not indicate that he would. Right, things could certainly change. And then also, like, I'm not sure what that gets you within the party if you're going to stay within the party, right? To be the "I told you so" person, as I know from my work at CNN, doesn't make you a super welcome person.
Oh, I know that from NBC and MSNBC. To be the "I told you so" person is to rank last in their love. But I would like her because I would like, if she wants to be a viable force in the party, and I hope she is, if she wants to be on the long list of vice presidential candidates, she got to endorse Donald Trump this morning. I mean, wholehearted Republican. I'm for the Republican. I took the pledge. I'm not breaking my word. That's what I want to hear her say. Does it matter that much to you?
I think, look, once you make that commitment, you have to stick with it in my mind, because I think it reflects not great on you if you make that commitment and then break it. Whether I would make that commitment if I were running against him is another issue, but that wasn't my position, right? That's her choice. So I agree with you in that sense.
All right. Now, I began my morning with Steve Inskeep over on NPR. I think I've done it three times in 30 years, but I love Steve. And I stated, I'm an outlier on this, and I know that. But I think the Alvin Bragg prosecution is going to help Donald Trump because it's lawfare. Lawfare has been practiced mostly against black males in America in their perception and in the reality. And I believe he's going to increase his marginal improvement in that demo as a result. What do you think about the Alvin Bragg prosecution?
I think the Alvin Bragg prosecution has made everyone that came after it has made those worse than the facts might necessarily be for those who are prosecuting Donald Trump. Like, it was so obviously a lawfare play. It's so obviously stretched. It's so obviously a novel way to use laws specifically to go after Donald Trump that, of course, it makes the rest of these attempts look like frauds as well. And I think at least the documents one has real substance, right? The rest of them, but people are correct to perceive that this is an attempt to use novel formulations to go after this specific person. And that's actually not fighting for democracy or the rule of law. That's the opposite, right? So I, even though I'm not a huge Trump fan, I assess that the Bragg project is awful, right? It's bad for democracy.
It's taking a misdemeanor, turning it into a felony via the use of a crime over which he has no jurisdiction in federal finance, and then stacking one misdemeanor into 34 felonies. Stacking of indictments is something with which the Black community who have been in court is very familiar, and they hate it.
Yeah, I wonder if that actually penetrates in that way. I would, my theory would be, I guess, that the just economic situation would matter more to particularly working class Black male voters, for instance. But there might be something there to what he can speak to in his experience. But truly, that one is such garbage. It's
now
such
I gotta
garbage.
Ask you before we run out of time. Our friend Guy Benson put a clip up of the MSNBC panel laughing about immigrant crime last night. I mean, I think it may have been a low point in a history of low points. What did you think of that, if you've seen it?
I saw it, and it looks like I know they're all lefties, and they all have worked in Democratic politics at some point, or at least in the media, which is basically the same thing, right? This is malpractice. This is political malpractice. They don't care about what you care about. They're going to laugh at you and mock you if you're concerned that, at least in Virginia, by the way, an illegal immigrant stands accused of having sexually assaulted a minor just days ago, right? This is something that's in the news cycle, which is why people are reacting to it. They see different things happening in their states and in their communities. And if you laugh at them, that doesn't help get their votes. I mean, it's insane that you would do that on television.
And they all did it. No one spoke up on behalf of the victims. No one.
Oh, it was a good goof. Yeah, I was amazed.
I was stunned, almost as stunned as the Celtics beating the losing to the Cavs last night, which you may not know, but the Cavs beat the Celtics by 1 point at the buzzer. Mary Catherine Hamm, listen to her and Vic at Getting Hammered on the podcast of your choice, the place you get your podcast, and go to X and follow her at MK Hammer. Well, I talked to Dwayne for a moment about my PhD, weightloss.com,
864-644-1900.
That's
864-644-1900.
So what did you eat last night on my PhD, weightloss.com program?
I had a slice of chicken pot pie.
Oh, there's carbs in that.
You can have carbs as
long
as it's
limited. Oh, good, my do-si-do diet.
No, you can't have all carbs. There's also chicken in said chicken pot pie,
there's
which
also
is protein.
Look through the chaos. What is it? Looking through the chaos?
No, look through the chaos.com.
Your
look
new podcast dropped yesterday.
And it was received quite well. It had a lot of downloads. It could stand some more, but
did
it had a lot of
Did you get your
downloads.
Five-star reviews? Did you get your comments?
I don't even know about that yet.
Oh, well, you want to encourage people to give you a five-star review and comment on it. I'm going to go over there and give you one star and say he may have lost 50 pounds with myphdweightloss.com. But he didn't have any do-si-dos.
Hater.
Come right back, America. Welcome back, America. I'm joined now by Chairman of the House Select Committee on Engagement with the Chinese Communist Party, Representative Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I note in the avalanche of Super Tuesday news, one story stands out. Not since the aftermath of 9/11. As an important national security measure been introduced with such bipartisan support as was introduced yesterday by you and your ranking member on the select committee. Tell us about this effort to finally get a foreign controlled adversarial application, meaning TikTok and a few others, banned from the United States users.
Well, this is the result of really a year's worth of work, bipartisan, not just with my ranking member, Raja Krishnamoorthy, but with the committees of jurisdiction. I salute Chairwoman Kathy McMorris Rogers for her constructive leadership on this. She has the jurisdiction over this bill, and they'll be doing activity this week to mark it up, but also engagement with the White House. We had the FBI director, for example, testify before our committee a few weeks ago about the national security threat posed by TikTok. The other thing we tried to do was learn from the failure of the previous Senate effort, which was viewed as too broad a grant of authority to the executive branch. So what we have here is a bill that says if you have an application that's controlled by a hostile foreign country, as we Congress define it, that would be China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea, you need to divest that ownership structure if you want that app to continue to be hosted on various platforms like the Apple App Store. So the bill really does two things. It recognizes that TikTok poses a national security threat under its current ownership, and it stops app stores and web hosting providers from distributing the TikTok app in the U.S. unless TikTok severs its ties to the Chinese Communist Party. It also ensures, crucially, that the next time the CCP unleashes an app like TikTok against the U.S., we can act quickly to stop it. And then finally, I would say, Hugh, the bill does not place any restrictions on individual TikTok users or speech. Instead, the TikTok app will simply stop working in the U.S. because marketplaces can't host it unless they change the basic ownership structure. And if American investors want to make money off their investment in ByteDance, they want TikTok to go public in the U.S., not in a crappy Hong Kong market, that will not happen under the current ownership structure. This is the only way forward. So we try to strike a balance. I'm cautiously optimistic, and I salute the constructive approach my ranking member, the members of my committee have taken on this bill.
So, Chairman Gallagher, what are the odds of getting it done in this Congress?
I think we can definitely get it out of the House very shortly here. The question then turns to the Senate. Now, the good news in the Senate is we have a variety of senators that understand the threat, foremost among them Senator Tom Cotton, who has been talking about this for months and months and months and clearly understands it. There's a bipartisan core of senators that were on the previous iteration of this bill. Marco Rubio, Senator King, Senator Warner had introduced a version or had attempted to stop TikTok. So we have a bipartisan group in the Senate that's interested in fixing this problem. What I'm hoping is that we'll get a strong bipartisan vote out of the House, and then the senators will choose to take that bill up rather than inventing a new construct. Because the closer we get to the election day, I think the higher the risk is for the Democratic political machine to make the case that, oh, we need TikTok in order to reach Gen Z voters. And by the way, there's Republican opposition as well. It's not, I don't mean to make that a partisan thing that have to do with, you know, certain investors in ByteDance and the money that they use to support conservative candidates. So my hope is that we can come together around this framework and the Senate will pass it expeditiously. And I've had a number of constructive conversations with senators with that in mind.
I don't know if you've dropped by to see Senator Fetterman yet of Pennsylvania, but his outrage over the pro-Hamas propaganda that has flooded TikTok since 10/7 may have put him in your camp of Democrats willing to support this legislation. Have you any indication from the senator on that yet?
I have not, but that's a great idea. And honestly, I would say post October 7th and, you know, with a lot of members and their constituents seeing rampant anti-Semitism on the platform, as well as external analysis we've had comparing that content on TikTok to content on Instagram and really revealing huge disparities that can't be explained away and really point to opacity around the algorithm with TikTok. That is what I think has generated a lot of bipartisan support for action on this. And so I would welcome a conversation with Senator Fetterman. I'll take that for action. And I'm willing to work with anyone who wants to get this done. I mean, this is, I'll admit it. On the one hand, it sort of seems simple. Yes, you know, a foreign adversary should not effectively control an application in the United States. On the other hand, it's legislatively complex. We want to make sure that we're not infringing on free speech. We want to make sure that we're not giving the executive branch the authority to go after American social media companies. And emphatically, this bill does not do that. This is very carefully drawn so as not to go overboard and focuses squarely on foreign adversary control of applications, which is something I think everybody can agree on. And so I think the hearing on Thursday in the Energy and Commerce Committee will be very crucial. And then I think we have a pathway to getting this done in this Congress.
And you've also almost certainly going to have the current majority leader Chuck Schumer is a strong supporter of the state of Israel on your side. Again, the Hamas propaganda put out by the CCP on TikTok was genuinely overwhelming. Did you have a breakthrough day in negotiation on this? And so when, who had the light bulb go off? Somebody always comes up with a way to thread the needle. And this is a difficult needle to thread because it cannot be too broad, nor can it be too narrow. It has to be exactly, it's got to be a sniper shot, not a machine gun. Who came up with the idea of let's use the app hosting platform?
Well, I would say this. We had a previous iteration of this bill that we were very excited about, and then we kind of lost momentum on it. Just, I think, because of the extensive lobbying effort, TikTok spent millions of dollars trying to scare members of Congress, and then the failure of the Senate effort. And so it really was, as I indicated before, what we saw, the content we saw on the platform post October 7th that reinvigorated the effort. And then we really just worked for months with the Energy and Commerce Committee and their staff to arrive at the right framework. And then we got technical assistance from the White House as well. And so this was really a multi-branch, you know, bipartisan effort. So there wasn't sort of one road to Damascus moment. It was just the product of months and months of work, of iterating and iterating on the construct. And I think, you know, we've arrived at where we've arrived because of the hard work and good faith of a lot of different people.
I'm sure Senator King, with whom you worked on the Cyber Solarium, will be on your side as well. Let me, too, while I have a moment with you, Congressman Gallagher, I'm a little bit concerned. Actually, I'm a lot concerned by the Jimmy Quinn article in National Review yesterday that you've exposed a Chinese biotech company working to help an American trade association keep their dancing in the dark. And I really hate this stuff. When I don't mind trade associations, I love them. I spoke to the NRB last week. I love the National Association of Broadcasters. I understand the need for and the efficacy of trade associations, but not when they let the Chi-Coms into them. What is going on there?
Well, what's happening is the CCP has gotten very good at weaponizing the DC swamp against us. As you'll appreciate, given your legal background, we have Foreign Agent Registration Act provisions that are very vague. They're exploited. They're under-enforced. We have the Lobbying Disclosure Act, which has similar loopholes in it. And so you have a trade-based association, in this case, one called Bio, representing the biotechnology industry, which includes companies like WuXi AppTec, which is a Chinese biotechnology company with troubling ties to the Chinese Communist Party and the People's Liberation Army. WuXi is embedded in China's military civil fusion strategy. It actively advances the CCP's objectives. And so for Bio to launch an advocacy campaign against my Biosecure Act, which would block foreign adversary biotech companies, and BGI is really the big Chinese company that we're worried about here, I think represents a violation of FARA and LDA. And so we're asking for the Justice Department to enforce that. And it really is disgusting. I mean, listen, I get it. You know, I've been in D.C. for 8 years now. I've seen lobbying at its worst, but no one should lobby on behalf of a foreign adversary, in my opinion, particularly not former members of Congress. We should outlaw that. I mean, it's really disgusting. It represents the worst of the D.C. swamp.
Now, I want people to understand, I have myself advocated for legislation. There's a bill right now that would mandate AM radio that I'm all for, but I don't get paid to do that. And so when you get paid to do something, you've got to be very careful about registering who you're working for. I mean, you've just got to do it. And I can't believe the Justice Department hasn't prosecuted this. Let me conclude today, Chairman, by asking you, we've got maybe 2 to 3 months left in the working life of the Select Committee, unless the next speaker extends it and revises it in your post-retirement years, new chairman, new staff, et cetera. What do you think has been the best thing that you've done? What do you want to get done in the next 3 months?
You know, I started off thinking that most of our successes would be legislative, and we've submitted a bunch of policy recommendations. So we've provided the legislative roadmap, but I've actually come to believe the biggest impact of the committee has been through our communication and our investigation. I've seen how it's actually changed behavior on Wall Street. Even in lobbying, we have people that are dropping certain lobbying firms because they represent CCP clients. I've gained a profound respect for what you can do if you have a platform and you use it responsibly and also work together in a bipartisan manner, because that just doesn't happen right now. So that has been, I think, the biggest learning experience for me. It's something I hope will continue in the next Congress, even though I won't be a member of that Congress. That being said, we have gotten a lot of legislation done in the National Defense Authorization Act process. But if Congress does oversight and investigations well and thoroughly, you can have a huge impact. Even something as simple as shining a light on the illegal CCP biolab in Reedley, California, which seems like kind of a little niche issue. Nobody was tracking that until we were able to work with local officials and expose the whole thing through a report. So that to me has been the unexpected, rewarding aspect of this experience. And I really hope it continues and we intend to finish it.
I hope you spend some time. We're out of time, but I hope you spend some time on what 40,000 military aged Chinese nationals crossing the southern border in 15 months means. We can't get into it today. We're out of time, but maybe next week we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Representative Mike Gallagher, follow him on X at Rep Gallagher. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Ambassador Michael Oren, formerly the Israeli ambassador to the United States, formerly deputy minister in an earlier Netanyahu government. So good to talk to you today, Michael. Sorry we can't get the computer to work, but I do want to find out from you if you're worried about the aftermath of the Gantz visit to Washington, D.C. I am. I think that the left wing of the Democratic Party is undercutting Israel at a terrible time to be undercutting Israel.
I think it's very disturbing. Here's how it works, Hugh. Yeah, it's good to be back with you. It's like this. A couple days ago, there was a report in the Wall Street Journal that Yahya Sinwar, the head of Hamas, said he's got Israel just where he wants us. We're bogged down in Gaza. And if we can get Israel to kill more Palestinian civilians, then the United States and the world will impose a ceasefire. And that ceasefire means that Hamas will win, Sinwar will come out of the rubble and declare victory. Now, who put him in that position where he feels that he's winning, right? The administration comes out and criticizes Israel every single day about the way we're conducting this war. We're inhuman. We're over the top. We're not getting aid, right? So the message to Sinwar is, hold on. Keep fighting. Keep holding those hostages, because eventually we'll break with Israel and we'll impose a ceasefire. The administration is now saying that the ball in Hamas's court over whether there'll be a hostage deal. Well, of course it's in Hamas's court. Who put it in Hamas's court? Why would Hamas agree to a hostage deal that doesn't end the war, right? Because Israel's not going to end the war. Why give up hostages? Keep the hostages for as long as possible, Sinwar's thinking, and eventually the United States will break with Israel. All the cards are being put into Hamas's hands. And you know by whom.
But I've got to say, Michael, I believe that Team Biden has radically misjudged American public opinion here, and they appear to be unaware of Israeli public opinion. While there is great and deep sympathy for all the hostages, including the 8 Americans and everyone else, there is nothing less than complete resolve, unless I am mistaken, in Israel to finish Hamas off. Am I correct?
But totally. Except for one group of communists in Tel Aviv the other day, there's been absolutely not one anti-war protest.
Wow.
Israelis are utterly committed. Not one. This is after, 5 months of war, 250 military dead. No. And Israelis are completely committed. And according to a recent Harvard poll, 82% of Americans agree with Israelis. I think I'm not a total expert on American politics. The people in the Biden administration are not looking at the 82%. They're looking at the polls in the 6 swing states.
Hey, President Biden was on the tarmac yesterday, mumbled something about, boy, we need a ceasefire for Ramadan. It'd be very bad in Jerusalem if we don't have it. I don't know where this comes from. It's a talking point of pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas people. Lots of wars get fought. And in fact, Arabs tend to start them on Israeli holidays. What do you think about this Ramadan rhetoric?
No, I don't think it's. I don't think Ramadan's going to make the difference. It'd be preferable not to be fighting it on Ramadan, but it won't be Israel that'll make that decision. It'll be Hamas will make that decision. As Hamas makes basically all these decisions, Hamas decided to break the ceasefire on October 6th and massacre our people. It's this constant criticism of Israel. it just gets to me. It gets me very deeply. This is not behavior which is compatible with that of an ally which is fighting for its life.
And although it is not representative of the ally
the
either.
Very poor.
Do people understand it's not representative of the ally? The ally is an ally still, as your title of your very wonderful book, Ally. Americans are with Israel. I think the vast majority of Americans want Israel to finish the job and us to give you the weapons that you need to do so, and respect and indeed admire the precision with which you have minimized civilian casualties, and would love to get relief aid into young Gazans. But I do think the Democratic Party is controlled by a left-wing group of pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian hardcores.
I don't know who they're controlled by, Hugh, but the fact of the matter is this. You want this war to end, you want the hostages to be released, then the United States should come out four square behind the state of Israel. But the message has to be internalized by Israel's enemies that they're not going to be able to come between us. And the message every single day is they can come between us just by holding out. I mean, it's just basic logic what I'm saying here. It's not political.
Now, you're right. That which gets rewarded gets repeated.
Hey, yeah. The message to Sinwar is hold on, and we will eventually pressure Israel to agree to a ceasefire, and you will win this war. I don't see any other message coming out of Washington. Do you?
Now, no, I don't. And I also see no message responding to it coming out of Israel. And that includes Gallant, that includes Gantz, of course, that includes Netanyahu and the far-right religious parties. They all say the same thing, which is we are going to destroy Hamas. And I don't believe there's significant dissent on either side of the Atlantic. There will be quite a reckoning when the war is done. Do you think that Israel is close to launching into Rafah?
I do. I think it's just, I don't understand why we haven't done it already. I understand we're going to have to move as many of the Palestinian civilians away from the battle area as possible. But I think it is inadvisable that we are waiting this long. My own criticism of the Israeli army over the years is they seem to think we have unlimited time. And in every round with Hamas, you know, we bomb from the air for 3 weeks before we're doing anything else, and we lose a lot of public opinion during the 3 weeks. We don't have that much time, and we've got to move. And I don't know why, and I don't think Ramadan is a good excuse.
So, Michael, are you back in the States or are you back in Israel now?
Now I'm back in the States. I'm in the beautiful town of Birmingham, Michigan.
I know you were doing, I know Birmingham quite well. My old college roommate's family was there. Are you doing fundraising for Hatzalah? Are you on a speaking tour? Is Israel doing public diplomacy through long-time trusted surrogates? Why are you back?
Remember the old SAT answer, D, all of the above?
I do. I always like D, actually. You can never go wrong with D.
All of the above.
Okay, well, how long are you going to be here for?
Another week.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time this morning, and I especially appreciate your giving the audience an opportunity, and I want you to repeat it again. What would be the best message for the president and the vice president of the United States to send in the State of the Union on Thursday night?
Again, and they're going to be hostages there. They've invited a number of released hostages, some of them I know, families of hostages. That's very good. But the message to the hostages would be, we're going to stand behind your state, four square. Nobody's come between us. Anybody thinks that we're going to oppose a ceasefire in the state of Israel, that Hamas can dig its heels in and win this war, they're wrong. All right, Israel's going to win this war. That's our message to Israel, and that's the message to Israel's allies throughout America's allies throughout the world. We stand by you.
That's on my bingo card for Thursday night. I sure hope I get to cross that square. Dr. Michael Oren on X. Thank you, Dr. Oren. Always a pleasure. That man travels more than anybody I know.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.